just be the start of a dynasty. This is history being written. The greatest moment I've seen in Premier League football.
Hey, welcome back to Across the Pond, a Premier League podcast hosted by Americans. Today you've got Chris here in D.C., Jess in D.C., Jacob somewhere across the world, and a special guest tonight, very special guest, someone who's been on the pod multiple times. Ladies and gentlemen, give it up for Nate Scott. Hey, Nate Scott on Twitter. How you doing, Nate?
I am wonderful. Thank you for having me. Has it been multiple times?
It's been probably twice, yeah. The last time we had you on our show, you were fresh off a bike accident.
Shit, that was right.
You can pinpoint
that. I was like
that.
Covered in feathers and bleeding. Oh my God, I totally remember that. Yeah. I crashed with a down jacket on and it ripped and all the feathers stuck to the blood on my face. And I was walking to your apartment and we just did the podcast.
Yeah,
that was so messed up. Why did I do that podcast? I should have canceled on you.
That was probably a good sign of what was to come for Fulham that season. I mean, I opened the door and you were just standing there just like a ghost. Like
that's just my commitment to Across the Pond, that I will show up bleeding and covered in feathers to drop my hot soccer takes.
But Chris, that's a good point. There seems to be sort of a flow chart of when Nate Scott is on the podcast. Are Fulham in the Premier League? Okay, yes. Check yes with Nate Scott. Okay, are Fulham good? Okay, no. Are Fulham potentially in shambles and is relegation and bad things happening? Okay, now Nate falls in there. It's a very simple flow chart.
I should say, I didn't get any invites in these intervening years here. I've been sitting around waiting. I guess we didn't want to talk about their fourth place finish in the championship, but okay, that's fine.
All right, well, let's cut to a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to change the subject. Look, we can't sit here and say we're going to interview every championship pundit out there.
That's fine.
Today, though, we're going to talk a bit about some of the stuff happening today in the Premier League world or football world. We'll also get into Fulham, of course. One side of our pod, very pro-Fulham so far. I think we need to either set the record straight or double down.
Okay, well, if picking Fulham to finish 15th in the Premier League is a strong, strong support for Fulham, then pardon me. Okay?
Yeah, like 15th. Jeez, like that's viewed as a hot take with Fulham. I picked them to win the Premier League 2 years ago like a drunken idiot. let's go. What do you want to ask me?
So we're seeing two different approaches between how they handled their last promotion, where they kind of bought player after player, disrupted the chemistry of the team a little bit, spent a bunch of money on acquisitions, and were relegated with 5 games to go. Whereas this year, it seems like they're doing sort of the opposite. They've got a few upgrades and some depth added, but generally they're taking the approach to try to stay up with the team that got them there. Another notable difference, obviously, is the coaches that they've had those two seasons. But do you think this approach will work better than their previous attempt?
So that's kind of the narrative right now, right? That we last time we spent $100 million. This time we're spending $8 million. And okay, that means we're not really making the same mistakes as we did last time. That is in part true. However, we have brought some of those players back who were loaned out last season, most notably with Andre Frank, Zambo, and Gisa, who is going to come back and actually play for us. So that is, like, in a way, kind of weirdly a new signing. They have signed new outside backs who should probably move into the starting lineup. We are probably going to sign a new center back who will move into the starting lineup. It looks like the midfield is going to be Anguissa and Mario Lamina, who were not part of the team last year. And so it is this weird thing that I think Scott Parker is doing well, and Tony Khan, the owner's son who really runs the team, have done, which is kind of create this narrative that there is continuity. We are going to really play the same team that got us here. However, new goalie probably will be one returning member of the back four, I think, by season's end, maybe one or two midfielders, and then Mitrovic up top. You know, it is going to be a new team. Because as we saw in the first game, when they really actually did roll out this side that was total continuity, it was like men versus boys. That was a championship side, and Arsenal ran them off the field. And so the biggest difference, though, I think, is they need continuity in style of play and tactics. And last time Djokanovic came up and he said, screw it, we're possessing all the time and we're gonna attack all the time and who cares, and we will never compromise who we are, and we just got destroyed. And then they flung hard the other way and brought in Ranieri, and that was a disaster. And so I think, yes, they aren't spending as much. I hope they'll stick with Parker and let him install a system that stays consistent. But this idea that they're going to do it with the same team that they played with last year is just not true, because that team's not good enough. I mean, they were the fourth best team in the championship, and advanced stats had them as probably the sixth best team in the championship. We got lucky to get up. So they really do need to do new changes.
Nate, how confident are you in Fulham's ability to create chances? Because I don't doubt that they'll be able to possess the ball. If they are able to get a lead, they will be able to hold on to it and maybe be able to grind out some, you know, 1-0 games. But are you confident in chance creation? You know, Fulham had most passes last year, although least chances created. The reliance on Mitrovic is well noted. I think there are some questions about whether or not he can perform as an out and out, you know, dominator in the Premier League, as he's shown, you know, great qualities in the championship. So what do you think is going to play out going forward? I know a lot of problems are at the back, but you got to score goals to win.
Yeah. If Cabano comes in and Lamina plays like he did in this midweek Carabao Cup fixture, like the base of the midfield, and they go to that double pivot, which I eventually think they will, that's a pretty stiff kind of wall to run through. Like, and Giese is a big dude, and Lamina's a tough tackler, and they've got Harrison Reed there as well, who's a great player from Southampton. You're right. The attack is the issue. Mitrovic, I think, is a Premier League striker. I just think he is. Right now, there is no service that can get to him. Niskin's Cabano is a nice change of pace player that should be the fourth or fifth option. He started. Ivan Caballero has looked lost for 6 months, and they just can't get him the ball. And I will say, you know, one complaint about Parker is this team presses pretty well. They defend pretty well. When they get the ball, they stop. You know, Mitrovic isn't really kind of like a against the grain player. He's not someone who's going to beat you with pace, but he can finish opportunities in unsettled play. And what I think they need to do eventually is either create real, you know, sign real wingers who can create opportunities, or turn to someone like Abu Kamara, who's runs like a chicken with his head cut off, but he runs 100 miles an hour, and just put him up there and kick it up to him, and maybe he can slap something across to Mitrovic. But you're right. I mean, that is really the issue. And I thought that was a more concerning thing with the Arsenal game, even more so than Tim Ream, was the fact that when the ball got to the top three, especially with Mitrovic not in there, nothing happened.
There was like no offensive threat at all against Arsenal.
None.
Do you think Anthony Knockhart's going to get any time at all in there? I mean, yes. I was actually surprised at how young he still is. I feel like I've been seeing Knockhart, you know, in and around the Premier League and Championship for like a decade now.
Yeah, you know, right now the solution to the winger problem is like, we're going to bring a bunch of guys in there and let them scrap it out. But like, I just don't know if the quality's there. You know, I think Knockhart is probably the best bet to break through. They just signed him to a contract extension. Kamara brings something in just sort of pace and unpredictability. Like, I don't think he knows what he's going to do, and so it's really hard for a defender to know what he's going to do. Knockhart is the most technically gifted. Niskin's Cabano is a tidy little player. And then we have Bobby De Cordova Reed, who was a striker, and now they're trying to kind of turn him into a center midfielder. I think the season will end with Mitrovic at striker, Knockhart on one wing, and then a player to be signed would be my guess. I just don't think there's enough quality up top right now as is.
In terms of expectations, though, Nate, I mean, we were talking briefly about 15th place being a reasonable pick, and I guess I can be convinced. Do you think there's any sort of expectation to make it into mid-table at all this season if changes are made, additional players are brought in? Like, what is the ceiling for you personally, and what's the ceiling for most Fulham fans, you think?
I think most Fulham fans would dream of in the 10 to 12 range. I think that would be, if everything goes right, I think we can settle in there. And by everything goes right, I mean, they need a center back and they need a winger who can create separation and create chances. A backup striker would be nice. You know, we're very much relying on Mitrovic to be healthy. But right now, I think Michael Hector is a Premier League center back. I truly do believe that. I think he's
love
an excellent player.
I love to hear that, Nate.
And
wow, you know what the press is there.
You know what podcast you're on.
So happy.
Virgil van Mijk, the Jamaican god. He is
I've never heard
spectacular.
That.
Oh yeah, no, that. that's what we call him in Fulham world.
Oh
no, he's
let me in.
He's fantastic.
All right.
By the way, we signed a goalie whose last name is Areola and an outside back whose name is Kenny Tete in the last week, which is our teenage Fulham fans are having a lot of fun with that. Between Kenny, Ola Aina, Anthony Robinson, and Joe Bryant, like those are four Premier League-ish quality outside backs. We have one Premier League quality center back, and that is a massive problem. Tim Ream is still the first choice. Tim Ream should be in a Premier League team. Tim Ream should be the fourth choice. That cannot happen.
Yeah,
and so
he
that's
really out of his element.
Oh my God. I mean, two or three spots on the field, which are just, it's championship quality. And it's really hard to stay up with that, especially when you don't have a transformational manager. Scott Parker's a smart guy. He's a great man manager. He's pragmatic.
Very
good
Bielsa.
He's a lot
of things.
But he's not going to change a team in a major way.
A lot was made of Jean-Michel Seri signing in the last Premier League campaign. He had that one wonderful goal, we'll remember. Do you think he's going to end up being sold? I've seen the links for him to remain in Turkey. If he doesn't, would you like him to play? Would you be willing to see him return after such a diabolical last Premier League season?
I still think, and I don't know why it hasn't happened yet, the Ryan Babel, Jean-Michel Seri swap is just sitting there. It's waiting. It just do it. Tony Khan refuses to do it because it would be embarrassing to give up for the amount he spent on Seri. He does not want to give him up, but just do it. Babel was wonderful for us. He was like one of the one players who liked it. Weird fact, Ryan Babel comments on every single Fulham Instagram post. Every single one.
What does
like,
he do?
Hey,
the tongue emoji?
But he's got, wait. But he's got some, yeah, he's got some questionable posts on Instagram before.
All right, let's leave all that out of it. All I'm saying is Babel's heart is at Craven Cottage. We love him. He can do stuff still.
He definitely
can. Get
him
in here. Galatasaray, apparently, they all hate him. They love Sarri. Let's just do it.
Yeah, I'd love for you to be my agent and just be like, Jacob can still do stuff. Hire this man. He yeah. He does stuff. I'm not going to tell you, but he does it.
I don't think Sarri will play a game this year in Fulham. They are doing this weird thing now where he wasn't training, and then they asked Parker about it yesterday, and he was like, oh, he's been in quarantine. It was like, why haven't any of the other players been in quarantine? And that was it. So I think they are sort of filling out this. Yeah, exactly. I think they are filling out this idea of like, oh my God, we might actually have to bring this guy back in the team. And like, if he had to play, like, could you play Lamina and Gisa and Sarri? Sure. But at that point, like, I'd rather Josh Onuma in there, you know? I think that was what the midfield will end up being. Like, I don't think Tom Kearney will end up the season, even though he's the captain. And I think Sarri will be gone. You know, who knows? Maybe he'll stick around because they can't sell him. But I don't think he'll feature much.
All right. Well, Nate, thanks for the update on Sarri. I mean, I really do appreciate that, although I don't think we'll be able to watch and see how he does in the Premier League if what you're saying is true. I am looking forward to seeing Ryan Babel, though. So
bring him in.
Make it happen.
Get it done, Tony Khan. I know you listen to this podcast.
Do you think he's going to come back with the red hair again? Like, it's like a I'm back or...
Whatever he wants. I love it. Babel was sneakily wonderful for us. And like
oh,
the last
so
10
good.
Games when everyone quit, Babel and Anguissa like were amazing. And everyone else just was getting ready for the championship or like trying to find a new place to play. But those two guys were wonderful.
What's the reach of this podcast? Do you really think we could get this in Tony Khan's ears? I mean, you're a man of some repute, Nate.
He follows me on Twitter. I could DM him. I've DM'd him. I've only DM'd him one time, and I wasn't like the lunatic fanboy telling him what to do with his signings. But maybe on this one, I'll have a few more beers and break my rule.
Well, if what he heard hasn't gotten us the reach to hit him yet, maybe this next part will. We have to talk Scotty Parker, Scotty Parks, Scotty Tuhati. Jacob and I, fortunate enough to put our arms around that man, take a nice little selfie a couple years ago. And what happened to Fulham, Jacob? What happened to Fulham? Are we the Fulham curse? We've got to ask you some Scott questions.
Yeah, I'm looking at a headline from a reputable source, the Sun newspaper. Just kidding. From today that says female football pundit sparks sexism row by calling Fulham manager Scott Parker a total fox. That was Heather O'Reilly. And was she out of line?
Scott Parker is a total fox. He looks like a goddamn World War I pilot. Have you seen him? Like, it looks like he should be in a bomber jacket. Nonsense. Yeah,
don't read the sign.
Handsome guy. My one concern right now is he's being overly pragmatic and trying to manage expectations too much to the point that it's like, aw shucks, we'll be lucky if we win five games. It's like, well, we would like to not get relegated. So my concern with him is the strategy is five at the back, batten down the hatches against teams of quality, and then try and win the ones against the other bottom feeders and the mid-table teams. My problem with that is, like, not to be a dick, but like, what is Arsenal going to finish this year? Seventh, eighth?
Nate, I couldn't agree more. Yeah, we are known to be an Arsenal anti-hype podcast.
Well, I mean, like,
beating Fulham 3-0 doesn't mean all of a sudden you're winning the Premier.
I mean, okay, if you want to pack it in against Liverpool, fine. You know, like, all right.
Yeah.
But like in the Premier League, you can't fear Arsenal anymore. You just can't. That has to be a game that you have to try and get a point out of at least. And I don't think they were trying to, I think they were just trying to stop the bleeding. And so like, and you know, after the game, Parker's saying, you know, they're a top team. They'll be competing for a top, for the title. It's like, no, they won't. They won't. That is not a title team. And if we're playing that scared against Arsenal, Premier League, there aren't a ton of easy games anymore. It's like, all right, are we packing it in against Wolves then? Are we packing it in against, you know, like, and so I do think we will see a more positive game against Leeds. And I think for this team, at least, they'll be like, hey, you know, they went up against Liverpool last year, but like we played them and we played them straight up last year in the championship and they're not that different. Scott Parker, handsome. I am worried that, you know, this idea of expectation management and grinding out results, which got us into the Premier League. We were better than it. We were more talented than most of the teams in the championship, and we were grinding out results in the championship. That's not going to work in the Premier League.
My wife watched the Arsenal game with me. We talked about this on this week's podcast. All she could say was like, who is that manager? Do you watch Fulham with your wife? I think she's found a new favorite club. She'll defect fully as I haven't done. How do you approach that in your household?
We have a young child now, and that kind of changes everything. So my 16-month-old daughter watched Fulham with me. And so my wife like went for a walk and got out, and my daughter made it into the intros and then crawled away, and that was it. So neither of the women in my life seem particularly interested in Fulham right now. And last year it was tough to watch just because I was watching on like ESPN Plus at weird times. So I will get my wife's opinion on Scott Parker soon.
You
guys saw the video of him giving the interview over the streets. So Scott Parker weirdly has the same voice as the rapper The Streets. He gave this like emotional interview after they got promoted, put it over Dry Your Eyes, Mate. And he just starts talking and it's like the most perfect, beautiful thing in the world.
We will have to link to it in this episode.
Yeah, seriously.
Jess, you're a geologist by background. What rocks would you compare Scott Parker's cheekbones to? Because they are
an incredible question. They really
hard
are.
As diamonds.
Yes, you could say diamonds, for sure. They are something to be admired.
What are the other hard stones out there?
Corundum. It's minerals, mostly minerals. There's a whole hardness scale that you can look at.
Mohs hardness scale. About.
Yeah, very good. But yeah, his cheekbone, he had something going on one of his cheeks.
Yeah, did he have a shiner? It looks like he got in a locker room bust up. Anyone notice that?
We're a hard club.
Yeah, I did notice the cheek was a little bloody this weekend. Somebody got too excited in the pregame and swiped him.
Maybe he had a bike accident.
If you actually want to listen to a great podcast, not that this isn't a great podcast, that came off very bad. Sorry. But a great podcast I listened to recently was Fulham's erstwhile center midfielder, Kevin McDonald, this Scottish guy who's hilarious, went on this Scottish podcast and like these guys just told ridiculous stories and you can't really understand what they're saying. But he told the story of the first game he played at Fulham. He was on the field and he got subbed in like the 75th minute and they were like trying to see off a game. And he saw a fan at Craven Cottage with a book sipping a Prosecco. And he got so worked up by it that he couldn't focus on the game. And like, he's telling the story where like, he's like losing his man and everyone's yelling at him. He's like, the guy's drinking Prosecco. Like he's reading a book right now. And apparently the guy would just look up from his book every once in a while to check in on the game. So that's
oh my goodness.
my favorite Fulham story. We're a nice club. It's a family club.
It is a family club. So, I mean, I'm looking forward to Fulham finishing mid-table, Nate. I really do.
Thank you.
I think it can happen if Babel comes. It's conditional. So if Babel comes, it's happening. If not,
Babel, and then I guess 15. We're trying to sign Terrence Kongolo, who hasn't played soccer in 2 years, but I guess he's going to solve our center back issues. So
all right, we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to ask Nate a ton of rapid fire tough questions, the hard hitters, and his new podcast, season 2 of USA Today's The Sneak.
Our podcast.
Am I allowed to say that?
Can you enjoy the moments? And the facts are, and the reality is that you can't really. You can't. You win a football match, and by the time you get to Saturday night and you're drinking a beer or having a little bit of Chinese, you're all of a sudden thinking about Monday morning and what the next game is. We live in a world and we live in a profession where you win a game, you lose the next one, and you're deemed as a failure. And you realise that you always have to be at the top of it and always planning. So, look, not for me. I hope that after tomorrow I can just...
Dry your eyes, babe. I know it's hard to take, but
yeah, are we decent?
Oh.
How do you think the game is going to go this weekend against Leeds?
It'll be good. The games are fun because...
It'll be good.
The games are fun because Leeds refuses to care, and then Fulham actually gets up for it. And I think Parker knows, like, he can't do his, like, Parker thing against Leeds. He's kind of got to go for it. They'll go for it a little bit more. Leeds can't have a boring game. They just can't. Because, like, and what's good is they just go balls to the wall, and Fulham hates counterattacking, but Leeds just leave space. So they're, like,
We got to match them. Nate, what we want to do is hit you with a rapid round of questions. We're going to ask you a number of questions. We'll probably alternate per question, and we'll give you, you know, limited time to answer. Let's say, you know, the amount of time it takes Babel to comment on a Fulham post. You get that much time.
Okay.
2.5 seconds, maybe?
Yeah, seriously. All right. Jacob, give me a ding noise or something, because I just talk. So let's go.
All right. I'll start first. Nate, who's the worst player you can think of?
Andres Townsend.
Hey, man. Thank you. That was an alley-oop.
I just want to know, he had an assist this weekend. Noted. Put it in the books. Thank you. That's his one for the season. Already out of the way.
It is his one for the season.
We'll move on.
All right. I'll go next. If you had to pick one member of the current Fulham team to do yoga with, who would it be?
Wait, are you setting me up with that question because of the yoga incident?
Absolutely.
Oh, okay. Mitrovic, then, because he forget. Because if for some reason I attacked him in a yoga session, which is what happened last or 2 years ago, he would forgive me, which is what he did. For those who don't know the story, Abu Kamara attacked Alexander Mitrovic in a yoga session after Kamara stole a penalty kick away from Mitrovic and missed, and then attacked him in a yoga session, which led to him leaving the team. And then he came back because Mitrovic is a big Serbian galoot who loved him and let him back in.
Amazing.
That's
answer.
A good
Thank
deep.
You.
That's a good deep cut. I'm glad you. I feel like you were trying to trick me with that one.
I love that
sure
yoga fight.
It.
I love that yoga fight so much.
Love a good yoga fight.
I think that defeats the purpose of yoga.
It's like the last place you'd think. Okay, sorry. Keep going. Ding.
What was your first pair of football boots that you remember? Ooh, first pair you had, first pair you loved.
First pair I had, my dad got me Copas when I was young, and I was okay with them, but I'm sure I had some like crappy cheapo ones. I can't remember, but Copas were like the first real boots I had. But then I got a pair of white Kelme Masters with the blue K on the side.
Oh,
and then my, And then in New England at that time was not something that you wore. And I got absolutely demolished by everyone for wearing those cleats. It was like an affront to their Patriots rooting forefathers or whatever. So yeah, I got rocked. Well,
I thought Miles was the only one who wore Kelmes on this podcast. I guess.
Those were beautiful.
I guess I can picture those boots. Those are the type of boots that I would go after on the field. I would just slide tackle anybody wearing those.
Oh, the white Calme Master with the blue. I'm looking at them right now. I just looked it up. Oh, God, what a beautiful pair of boots. And they had the oversized tongue, like the way too big tongue that you had to Velcro down, I think. Oh, what a pair.
All right. I'm going to go with, should the Michael Jackson statue be reinstated outside of Craven Cottage?
No. Oh, it was weird. It was a weird thing. It was a weird thing. And it just like made everyone make fun of us. And it was like, whatever. I can deal with us being like the little club by the river that plays in a cottage and has the guys drinking Prosecco. But like the Michael Jackson, like that was weird. Like that was just a weird thing. Like the old owner built this statue and it was weird.
Outside of such a classic stadium, too.
I know. It's like this picturesque, beautiful stadium. And then there's this marble bust or bronze bust of Michael Jackson, like, grabbing his crotch. It was weird. Like,
I'm surprised they still had a reputation as a family club with that statue up.
Like, it was just like, what do you say to that? Like, it's just so incongruous with everything. It's like, yeah, we got a kooky owner. You know, that's like all you can do with that.
Did he go to a game once? I can't remember.
Michael Jackson
went to a Fulham game or not.
He might have.
I think it was even more tenuous. I don't actually think he ever came to a game. I think they ended up after the fact saying, oh, he came to one game and was a real big fan. But I don't believe there's any record of that.
Show me the receipts.
They said in 1999 he attended a league game against Wigan Athletic at the stadium. I don't think. By the way, one of my favorite quotes ever, which I'm realizing now, people were like, hey, Muhammad Al-Fayed, why is there a statue of Michael Jackson outside? And he goes, if some stupid fans don't understand and appreciate such a gift this guy gave to the world, they can go to hell. I don't want them to be fans. So for a while there, if you were not a fan of Michael Jackson, you were not welcome as a fan of Fulham. Anyway, yeah, I will say, like, I respect Tony Khan and Shad Khan for coming in and be like, you know what, we're gonna take that down. And that's one of the few times where they like tore down a piece of a stadium history and all the fans were like, like that's good. Like, don't, we're cool. Like, we're not gonna fight you on that.
So I want to move it to other famous folk, legendary football partier. So you can only spend one night partying with one of these three. Who do you choose? Legendary drinker George Best, legendary partier Diego Armando Maradona, living it up his best life at Napoli, or final option Ronaldinho, who's, you know, often seen at carnival and in jail and, you know, sneaking into countries, bootlegging, who knows what. Who do you choose?
The answer is not Ronaldinho, because I have a pet theory on this. I believe he was jailed intentionally to get away from people who he owed stuff to, or like he was in trouble. And so he went and was like, I have a fake ID in Panama. Oh, you're arresting me. Oh, no.
Yeah, like, that was weird.
Wow.
That stuff was weird.
So like, if you're one of the most famous people on earth and you try and use a fake ID, that is a sign to me that he is trying to get arrested on purpose. So I don't want to get arrested. Maradona would kill me. I'm going George Best. I mean, George Best would also kill me, but I feel like I could like, I could just like toss drinks to the side or like get so drunk I'd wander off and pass out. Whereas like Maradona, we don't have to go too much into it, but like that would be bad. I don't think my heart could take it.
No, good answer. The best part about that Ronaldinho story is I don't even think he needed an ID or visa or ID even to cross the border to get into. Was it Paraguay, right? Is that what?
Yeah,
that
man was
most hilarious.
That man was trying to get arrested. He needed to be safe somewhere, and he knew he would be safe behind bars.
You don't want to drink prison hooch out of a toilet with Ronaldinho? That would be one for the record books.
I do not.
All right.
I'm going to take it back to music for a second. What is the best song on Taylor Swift's Folklore album?
That's a really good question. This is a great record.
Nate wrote a review of this album. That's why
I did write a review of this album. I've never liked Taylor Swift, but I like Folklore. Before I wrote about soccer, I was a music critic, by the way. I'm not just some jamoke who decides to write about Taylor Swift out of nowhere, even though that's kind of what I did. I like the one with the oboe, Epiphany. That is my favorite track.
Good song. It's a good song.
So I think The One is actually a really nice album opener, and I like that song a lot too.
I would agree. Chris, Jacob, any thoughts on that?
1989 or bust for me. That's all
that was
I can
the
say.
Last Taylor Swift record I liked.
I like her political views. Nate, I got to ask, you know, we've talked a lot about Fulham players. We've mentioned a couple American Fulham players. Who's the best American Fulham player?
Oh, Clint. Not even close. I've written about the goal he scored against Juventus multiple times, but I do think that is the most important goal in Fulham history, probably with maybe like a great escape goal scored by Danny Murphy and kind of the conversation. And I'm sure some like goal in the 1920s that I'm forgetting about because all the old Fulham fans give us crap.
How dare you?
I know. And I've written about it. I think that was actually a really important goal for American soccer and just showing American players and pundits and fans that like we could do it in Europe at that level in club football and like score a goal like that. Like I thought that was like a huge moment. McBride's a legend. I think he's probably the most beloved Fulham American player, and Bocanegra kind of carved out a legend of his own right, but Dempsey was the best.
If you could steal anything from the American Museum of Natural History, what would it be?
Are you setting up me to shill for my
Actually,
podcast?
Maybe I should reframe. Which gem would you steal from the American Museum of Natural History?
The DeLong Star Ruby, which you should all look
up. It's a good one.
If you don't know what a star ruby is or a star gem, they're unbelievable. They're huge and they're perfect circles and they have this, if you shine light through them, an actual star shines. It's very interesting.
Hey, who's
and
the
weird.
Geologist here?
Sorry, shit.
I'm kidding.
I failed geology. I know one thing about geology and that is these three stones that I did a podcast on. Should I start shilling? Is now the time?
Yes, now's the time. I mean, let's talk about that to the listeners who don't know. Nate and I, apparently. Wow, this is a duo.
Yes.
We have a podcast by USA Today called The Sneak. And for those of you who don't know, it's really, I mean, Nate, I'm going to totally butcher the synopsis here. I would say it's true crime from the POV of sports.
It was supposed to start as a sports true crime podcast, and then it turned into a true crime podcast that just sometimes happened to be about sports, basically.
One, I have to say, I'm super impressed with your ability to tell stories in general. As a journalist, as a friend I play soccer with, as somebody who's joined us on the podcast multiple times. And for those of you who want to listen to The Sneak, you can find more about that show at thesneakpodcast.com. And again, you can follow Nate on Twitter at anatescott. But I mean, we could talk about the show and I want to get into some details given we have Jess Malone, a geologist expert here to talk through it. But I mean, how do you feel about, you know, where things stand with the podcast right now?
Season two is a lot different than season one, I gotta say. Season one, Chris and I worked together on season two. Unfortunately, we had to work with a different due to corporate reasons and all this other stuff. So I had to work with someone else for season two. But on season one, I will say it was a quirky crime with a very quirky, interesting character who was a guy who robbed a Brinks truck and escaped in an inner tube down a river. And Chris and I worked on that podcast together and told this story of this kind of quirky guy who in the end, you know, like really regretted what he did. And, you know, I think felt real remorse for what he did and was trying to kind of move past it and become a better person while still being kind of a, you know, crazy guy. Season two was a true sociopath, a champion surfer who robbed the Museum of Natural History in New York, which is the fun kind of Ocean's 11 start to the podcast. And then as you find out, he actually murdered two women. And then as he admitted to us over the course of the podcast, actually might have killed a lot more people. And so, you know, season one, I think, was our kind of fun, quirky, weird story on drugs and crime and this kind of very interesting, unique criminal. Season two was... We kind of structured it and framed it as Breaking Bad. And I will say that this is, I guess, a spoiler alert, but I mean, it happened. It's in the news. It was in the New York Times. Our main character in season two actually died this past Saturday, 3 days before the final episode was supposed to be released. This was a man who kind of low-key threatened my life a few times, but still someone I spent a long time with. You know, I think that season one, at least from a storytelling perspective and an interviewing perspective, felt mostly good at the end. And, you know, and this was a very different experience. This was spending a long time with a person that I truly kind of feared and didn't admire greatly. And so that was very hard. That was hard on me. That was hard on my family. Like, that's just,
right,
you know, when a guy's killed a lot of people and he says he knows dudes in Detroit and they're coming to get you, like, that's not a great feeling. So anyway, listen to my podcast. It's a barrel of laughs and super fun. Shit.
Wow. Hey, I want to rewind just a second, Nate.
Yeah.
So you said that you couldn't work with Chris for contractual reasons. And what I'm really thinking about is that you actually gave him the sack.
You sacked me,
so,
bro?
You know, how did you sack Chris? You know, did you call him into the office? Did you just put a note in his locker? You know, how did you terminate my man here?
I'm
just wondering.
I said, everyone who's working on this season of Sneaks, stand up. And then I said, not so fast, Chris.
I still comment on all the posts like Ryan Babel, though. I'm there. I'm quick to comment.
No. Chris, in terms of finding the style and aesthetic for the show, was so influential and like, you can even hear it in season two, even though the story got a lot darker and the texture got, you know, a bit grittier, you know, the music choices and the aesthetic choices that Chris made have like carried over and become really part of the show's identity. And which is why I insist he say our podcast, because this absolutely is still definitely part of.
So you're telling me this is one of these transfer deals where, you know, the club still gets residual fees off of, you know, or still pays salary. Is that what we're talking here?
Exactly.
You know, that's what's going on. Yeah. All right. Hey, can you just talk about, Jack Roland Murphy as just a subject? I mean, I know you mentioned there's this dark side, but from all the things I've sort of read about him, and I haven't had a chance yet to listen to season two, he sort of made out to be a very eclectic, sort of well-rounded, kind of multifaceted, you know, just got surfing, there's sort of artistic trends here. You know, what did you make of him as a subject?
Yeah, so Jack Murphy is the subject of season two of The Sneak. I realized I just like dived into like this guy threatening my life. I didn't even say who he was. Jack Roland Murphy, national surfing champion who robbed the Museum of Natural History and then was convicted of murdering two women. And then found Jesus, convinced the governor of Florida that he deserved to be released and got out and became a prison mega preacher, or like became involved in like the evangelical community, mega church community. Jack as a subject, I'm pretty sure was a genius. I think he had his IQ at like 145. And what was very interesting about interviewing him was he would tell you all this stuff and you'd be like, all right, he's lying. Because when you interview criminals, that's what they do. They lie. He would say stuff and he's like, I played in the California Youth Symphony Orchestra and I dove with the Flying Willenda family, the circus family, and I made hats for Richard Nixon. And you're like, all right, this guy, and I'm in the Texas Country Music Hall of Fame. And you're like, all right, this guy's just fucking, he's bullshitting me. Okay. And then we looked it up and all that was true. Like all of it was true. He had been in the Flying Willenda family circus and he had met presidents and he had been the national surfing champion and he had like done all this stuff. And so, I mean, from a character perspective, it was like, oh my God, like this guy is, he doesn't seem real. And he's sharp. He was really sharp, even though he was kind of getting up there in age. He was very, very sharp and he was very controlling. And so like you would try and interview him and like Chris, I know you remember in season one, that's something our last criminal tried to do where I asked him a question and he talked for the moment of the podcast was he talked for 43 minutes straight. Like, oh my God, he talked for 43 minutes straight. I asked Jack Murphy on our first day of sit down interviews, we talked for 4.5 hours and I asked 5 questions in 4.5 hours. Like this man purposefully would talk for a long time about the things he wanted to talk about, which was not the murder of these two women, which he always denied doing. And then over the course of the season, what we were able to do, which no one has actually done before, at least not in 50 years, was we were able to find the family members of one of the women he murdered. And then we were able to actually confront him with that. And that's the last episode. And that was the last conversation I had with him before he died. And I won't say too much else about it.
So it seems like there's a lot of darkness here and Fulham is perhaps compounding to that.
No.
You're a real glutton for punishment, so it would appear. But that's really actually fascinating stuff. And season one was great, and I look forward, you know, to starting season two. In fact, I have the first couple of episodes downloaded, and I'm going to work out after this and get to it.
Hey, The Sneak. It's wherever you get them. And we're actually now, I feel bad. I've spoiled that this guy died, but I mean, it's out there, but we're recording a bonus episode right now to try and track down some of his friends and family and some of the reporters who've covered this story. So
we have to specifically talk about the crime that's committed with our resident geologist on the line, Jess Malone. There's a lot of talk about rubies, sapphires, star of India. Yeah. We need the expert analysis on this.
I'm like sheepishly being like, fuck, why didn't I interview a geologist for the show? I'm such an asshole. Like, God damn it.
You got to get you would want a gemologist. Some geologists care about this stuff at all. Like if you try to talk to some geologists about crystals, they're not having it. So that there's different kinds of geologists that are willing to dive into different topics. I happen to enjoy them all. But yeah, these are some good looking gems. The star is kind of an optical illusion feature caused by the inclusion of another mineral called rutile. So there you go. You learn something new every podcast. But obviously that makes those pretty unique. And you know, this collection, I think they were saying it was worth $400,000 at the time and is now worth however much million in today's economy. But obviously they keep these locked away, as you'll hear from the sneak. So to get into any museum and actually pull off stealing this stuff is pretty incredible. But
Jacob, you recently bought a ring. You know, like generally what a carat is?
It's something you pay a lot of money for.
Yeah. Okay. It's a weight, right? Am I right in that? And so like a 1 carat diamond's nice, a 2 carat diamond's huge. The Star of India is 563 carats.
The size comparisons when you look it up too. I mean, I was just reading about the size of it and it just looks massive.
And they don't find it like that, obviously. They find it in a much bigger piece of mineral, and then they recognize that if they polish it down and shape it a certain way, it will become something that obviously increases the value of it. But the big round, nicely polished gems aren't just lying around.
That's sort of the best part about this is these guys were like jewel thieves, and they would always bring stuff to their fence, the guy who would then sell it on. And they brought that to the fence and the guy was like, What am I supposed to do?
Who am I supposed to sell this to?
This is like, it's the size of a baseball and it's worth $1 billion. Like what do you want me to do with this? And so that was actually how the FBI was able to recover it, was because the fence just sat with these things. I think he put them in a body of water and he buried them because he didn't know what the hell else to do with them. So if you're ever going to pull off a jewel heist, listeners, do not steal priceless things that can't be cut up into smaller stones, or else you can't get rid of them. This is a learning podcast too.
It is.
We're going to have to consult our legal counsel now that you're giving out, you know, jewel thieving advice over here.
These lessons.
I didn't think we'd need it. Now, usually it's because of something I say that we need to, you know, get legal involved, but you're ruining it for everybody.
So again, the full season is out on all platforms now. You can check it out there. But Nate, I mean, what are you thinking for season 3? Is there a season 3 for real? Are you thinking about it? Are you, when's the feature film? What are we doing here?
We're going NASCAR.
Oh, hell yes.
That's all I can say right now.
Wow.
There's a character in season 2 named Sonny Gretch, who is one of Jack Murphy's accomplices and did time for a job he pulled with Jack Murphy. About an hour into our conversation for season 2, Sonny said, you know, and then I got out of jail and I was smuggling drugs through NASCAR teams.
Oh,
but then I went
God.
And did that. And I was like, hold on, let's go back to that part. And then we looked it up. And late 70s, early 80s, there was something in NASCAR called Black Thursday. Started digging into this story, and we found out a NASCAR crew chief around that time disappeared off the face of the earth. So we're going looking for him.
Oh, there will be some characters in this one.
That's the plan anyway.
That's fascinating.
We'll see.
Well, Nate, I appreciate you coming on to the show. I know we all appreciate you bringing that Fulham insight, that true crime lens. I appreciate the Jamaican name drops. Kind words to me tonight. I have to ask one last question. We ask every guest now this question before they leave, and we just got to know the truth, Nate. And it's a yes or no question. Is chili a soup?
Chili a soup?
Is chili a soup?
Yes. I will provide no explanation.
Yes?
My man.
The answer
you.
Is yes, and there's no
Thank
explanation.
You. This right. is a man who's
you're never
from
coming
New England. Back. He knows soup, okay? He knows all types of chowders. He knows the full litany and spectrum of soups. This man, definitive answer, Nate Scott. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
What? All right. Again, you can find Nate on Twitter at @anatescott. His podcast, again, thesneakpodcast.com. Anything else you want to plug, Nate?
I write for For the Win, which is a USA Today sports site. And if we ever play soccer again, I play for Girl FC, but not really, because we don't really play anymore.
Remember soccer?
Yeah, I'm so fat and washed. It's horrible.
You can find us on AcrossThePond.co, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and more, Google Podcasts, at AcrossThePond on Twitter. Nate, thanks again for coming on, man. I'm going to take a second.
This is so delightful. No one ever wants to ask me about football.